This is Common Sense Ohio. Hey, this is Brett. Norm's with me. Steve, again, is out saving the world this week, which is a good thing. A very good thing. Common Sense Ohio brought to you by Harper & Company CPAs. They are helping entrepreneurs like you simplify taxes, implement proactive strategies, enjoy, and all the while to help you enjoy that entrepreneur journey. You know, even though, you know, businesses don't really roll on that April 15th tax cycle, it is a good time to kind of take a look because we're in the middle of April. And do you like you working with the current CPA you've got? If not, give Harper CPA a jingle. Go to harpercpaplus.com and give them an interview. What you got to lose? A few minutes, half hour, hour. You'll love Glenn. If nothing else, you'll be gut laughing by the end of the interview. So give them a shot. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's jump into headlines.
Yeah. So what caught my eye in the last couple of days is a hoist by her own petard type of story involving.
Is that your phrasing?
Yes. Yes. Right. Like a knight who sticks his lance into the ground and ends up getting ejected off his horse. Letitia James, who is the Attorney General of New York State, famously campaigned about going after Trump. I mean, she campaigned on that as, and that's probably wasn't legitimate actually to do that. I would think the New York Bar Association would go after somebody who campaigns that they're going to put somebody else in jail as a campaign promise. But at any rate, she, as you know, accused and successfully prosecuted Trump along with Alvin Bragg, the New York City prosecutor, Trump for allegedly overstating the value of Mar-a-Lago in order to get favorable mortgage terms. And there were something like 37 counts, and they elevated it into a felony somehow. And he ended up getting a judgment against him for $500 million. So it's under appeal. But this same person, Letitia James, has now been accused by the Federal Home Loan Administration. They have sent a referral to the FBI to have her investigated. And documents are floating around on the internet of her mortgage application where she states in the state of Virginia, she's full-time New York Attorney General. She, in the mortgage application, states that she is a Virginia resident and she's living in this house in Virginia full time in order to get good terms on her mortgage application. More or less, except for a few details, more or less what she accused Trump of doing, she allegedly has done herself. So, you know,
Hopefully she's living there six months out of the year or whatever. You know, what is the legal? Well, it depends on what Virginia state's a legal resident is, I guess.
Well, it's not about that. It's about
you know what I mean, that piece of it.
Yeah, but it's not about being a citizen of the state. It's about on the mortgage saying that you're living there full time.
Right. Exactly.
That's a different person you're making the promise to. So at any rate, we'll see how that shakes out. We'll see if the FBI and the Department of Justice decide to pick this up. My guess is, my hunch is that they will. You know, the turnabout is fair play, and she wants to play with the big dogs. You know,
you better keep your house in order.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, come on.
East.
So, One of the some of the more national stories we had on the tariffs, you know, the big dip last week in the stock market, and then it's roared back in the last few days, you know, restoring some of the losses people had. And I question whether they're really professionals on Wall Street, the traders. They seem like a bunch of nervous children that every time somebody, you know, does anything that ruffles their feathers, they all go into a selling spree. And they seem like lemmings to me, like they follow each other.
Yeah, it's definitely based on fear.
Wall
Street always has been. It's you know, you make your money on the fear.
Right.
And honestly, you do, you know.
And I mean, otherwise, Brett, how can you explain that they lose 10% of the market, right, one day, and then the next day it comes up 5%.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, guys, the same conditions exist. You know, it's just some verbiage out of the White House, and then you freak out, and then you feel better. And it's like, aren't you people professionals? Like, don't you, you know, at any rate.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, it's possibly teaching we investors, which again, you mentioned, I think we brought up a specific percentage last time of, you know, only maybe 10, 20% of us really dabble in the market. We just have to have hard skin to this.
Yeah. 10% of the population owns 80% of the stock market.
That it does come back, maybe not as quickly as we want, but it does come back. I mean, it freaked me out too. It's like, okay, it dips down. How long will the dip be, or will it continue to dip down?
Right.
But it does come back up. You can't always count on it, of course, but it's that we just have to. I mean, I guess all depends on your age. I mean, if you're 80 and living off of that, that's a different story.
It's a casino.
It is a casino.
Yeah. You know, the idea, I guess, of people anticipating that it's always going to go up. I mean, that's a bad assumption.
Right. Right.
Right. Right.
So you always have to have the lows to get the good deals.
They say,
and then the highs, when hopefully you time it out right. You tap out when it's high and take your money and run.
But you got to diversify. You have to have savings and other things.
Yeah.
You especially as you get older, you can't just keep playing the casino with the most aggressive stocks that you're picking. You know, you got to go with some annuities, some savings in the bank, some cash reserves. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You buy a chunk of gold and put it under your mattress. I don't know what you want to do, but you know, the stock market, you just can't count on it continually going up.
Yeah.
So at any rate, 10 countries have come back, and this is part of the good news that I guess the stock market's reacting to, is that something like 75 or 80 countries have contacted the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of the Commerce departments and have said that they want to have negotiations. So that's good. Ten of them are said to have deals that may be finalized in the next few days or weeks. So that's all good. And I think that's a calming factor. And certainly we all want that.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And to settle down so we can do business.
Yeah.
Because right now it's very difficult to if your business, and yours does a little bit, relying on import, export of just getting, you're not manufacturing, but you're getting stuff from another country, you know, sort of thing. It's hard to plan. And it's
challenging.
It's challenging. It just is. And to budget and to know how this year is going to come out. But that's good. We've got to get these countries to say yes, say no, whatever they want to do. And then, you know, then the next step, then the next step, but just kind of equal it out.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I hope it's zero tariffs for each country in these deals. But, you know, I do believe, you know, like some of these countries that have 20% tariffs, Trump, at least in the interim period, is going with 10% across the board, except for China. So we're still at a disadvantage, but I think that's during this 90-day pause where he has laid down 10% across the board, which is a lot less than the 25% that he was threatening across the board. So now it's 10%, which is a lot less.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good. Yeah. I like a president who is not worried about losing face, that will change his mind, that looks at, you know, people's reaction on Wall Street, people's reaction on Main Street, and is willing to change things. And people want to say, oh, he backed out, and they want to make it sound like it's a negative. I think it's a positive if you're not so locked into your position that you won't change. So I like the fact that there's some flexibility being shown here, even as he's being very tough in trying to restructure these relationships. So he's not as stubborn as a lot of people thought he was going to be on this. And whether you want to call it backing out, I really don't care. I'm glad he's changing his mind on some of these things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We would not be having the same conversation today at
That's
this
right.
moment if he
That's
wasn't
right.
changing his mind.
Right.
However it's labeled.
That's right.
That's
Label
very true.
It any way you want.
That's very true. I mean, and those know. That call him, you know, flip-flop or whatever the case might be.
Fine. Fine. Call it whatever you want.
It could be a lot worse. And, and again, it's not perfect. It certainly isn't. Everybody's feeling some pain.
Yeah.
But at least he's changing his mind. Thank goodness.
Yeah, so I guess it's kind of like my teacher could say I flip-flopped in algebra when I went from being a poor student to a good student. So, you know, characterize it any way you want. I think that there is this story about this guy from El Salvador that lived in the United States for 11 years, has three kids, has a wife, allegedly he's been beating her, according to the, you know, some of the neighbors. So they want to call him a Maryland dad and and all this stuff, but he's an illegal immigrant and he was found to be a member of the MS-13 gang by two immigration courts. The final court, though, bought into his claim that he was going to get beat up in El Salvador if he was deported back there because a rival gang would harm him. And so a judge said, okay, you can deport this guy, but not to El Salvador. So what did immigration do? They made a mistake. They sent him to El Salvador. The president of El Salvador said on Monday in the Oval Room at the White House that he is not sending this guy back. This guy's a citizen of El Salvador. Bukuki, it said, I'm the president of El Salvador. I'm not sending this guy back. He's our citizen. I'm not sending him back. We're going to go ahead and process him, either release him or keep him in prison for whatever crimes he's done in El Salvador. So that's where we are on this. But it seems to have become a cause celeb in Hollywood and with the two senators from the state of Maryland. So Cory Booker and Van Hollen are going to El Salvador to plead their case to the president there of El Salvador to release this guy back to the United States. And the legal experts, the White House, people like Stephen Miller and Tom Homan and Christine, they have all said, if this guy comes back to the United States, all that's going to happen is they're going to deport him to another country. He's still going to get deported. But so it seems to me like it's a, I don't know. To me, it's like a lot of smoke, not a lot of fire. It's a way to try to make the administration look disorganized or unfair or whatever. But this guy he's not a citizen. He's an illegal immigrant. He's been found to be an MS-13 gang member. I say deport the hell out of him. You know, I want all those murderers gone. Like, you know, it was an MS-13 guy that killed that mother of five in Maryland. And I want to know what Booker and Van Hollen have to say about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Booker's kind of riding on his 24, 25-hour, stance, popularity right now. Again, good for him. I mean, I think it's, taking a sidebar, I think it's interesting how he approached doing that 24-25-hour deal.
Right.
He wasn't wearing adult diapers or anything. I mean, this dude, he was physically hurting at the end of it. I mean, God bless him. He did it, that sort of thing.
It's
pretty amazing.
Somebody counted. He used the word fabulous 98 times.
No, did he really? After a while, you probably go to a crutch word, don't you? Your mind is just kind of going, I got another hour. What's my favorite word? That sort of thing. Yeah, for sure. But no, yeah, I wonder, you're right. It seems... I would hate for this situation. Let's say they bring him back. They really don't deport him. He stays here and he kills his wife because he beats up his wife. Now that would look great. She's probably in a better position because he's gone now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like a lot of effort to bring somebody back in and he's going to go somewhere else.
And Brett, some of the speech, like some of the, This is where we're called common sense on this show. And this is where it doesn't show common sense. So where the opposition to Trump is going with this, okay, is they're saying, well, if they can do this to this MS-13 guy, Garcia, right, and send him to El Salvador, then they can disappear you too. Like, they can grab me and Brett off the street and send us to El Salvador too.
Yeah, they're trying to. I mean
they're overstating.
And there are some stories. I saw one interview of an attorney that represents illegal immigration attorney.
Right.
There we go. Finally spit it out. Apparently, she got an email saying that she's going to be deported. And again, they're making a story out of it. And she got the email. They showed it, but yeah. I'm sure it probably was a misprint, or because she represents immigrants, she's probably on. They've got her email, that sort of thing. And she even stated, "I'm not afraid. I don't think they're going to deport me and such." But it plays to that exact story you're talking about, that they're just going to grab you on the street, and send you away. Okay.
Well, they sent her a letter.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah,
did they grab her?
It was a letter. Yeah,
no,
it was a
they
letter.
Did not.
Yeah,
they sent her a letter saying, hey, we have a hearing and we're going to.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you heard this. It might be the same attorney,
maybe.
Brett. They graduated a couple of illegal immigrants from law schools out in California. I'm sure elsewhere, probably Harvard and Yale, too. Yeah. So there are people practicing law in the United States that are here illegally, you know. I think San Francisco actually elected somebody to city council. That's an illegal.
That sounds familiar. I think you may have brought that up. Exactly. I don't understand the process
or in the
filling
administration.
Out paperwork.
Yeah. It was some official there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
Like
there aren't citizens for those jobs? Whatever.
Going back to the application process
of,
okay, you are... what's missing, or do they have paperwork to the counter of being,
Garcia just came in like no paper. He was a gotaway.
Okay.
So he's not here illegally. Like, he overstayed his visa, or he was a student
he's basically been underground.
He's a gotaway. He's a guy that came across a border somewhere. Right. And he's just here. So, well, not here anymore.
No. So, and won't be, no matter what the outcome is. Exactly.
I mean, unless the president of El Salvador, succumbs to the Supreme Court of the United States, but it's not his Supreme Court. He doesn't have to obey anything that John Roberts tells him he has to do.
Right.
So, you know, the Supreme Court ordered Trump to facilitate his return. And I assume that means the State Department asks El Salvador to return the guy, and I'm sure they will. And then El Salvador can say no.
All right, which they did. Yeah, we have the right to do, too.
We have, we don't have to extradite people.
You don't have to. God.
So Gayle King, Oprah's bestie, went up in outer space. Well, almost outer space. They went up, I think, 60 miles high. And I guess outer space officially starts at 62 miles high. And
they have signage?
Yeah. Like the Roadrunner. Wait, Coyote.
My mind went there as well, too.
That's beautiful.
You are now entering space.
Space. Right. Use your air brakes on the way down. I don't know if you saw this, but they were screaming something. And when the parachute was bringing them down, all six ladies on board. So it was a full female payload, because they did not actually operate the spaceship. It was, robotically launched and then robotically landed. Mm-hmm. Just like a lot of airliners now are pretty much, robo-controlled on takeoff and landing. Sure. Same kind of thing. And so they were cargo, if you will, and they were screaming on the way down. And my only problem with this story, right, is I don't want to get into the dippy remarks. When they came back, they were very emotional about the trip, and that's fine.
And who wouldn't be?
And who
would? About it,
and they can,
God grief.
And they can scream and yell, and they're all wealthy, because I think it's $1 million for the flight. It was 11 minutes. And the terms I heard were $100,000 per minute, which makes their tickets $1 million plus.
Yeah, wow.
So at any rate, One was Jeff Bezos's girlfriend or his fiance, and then, you know, Gayle King and a bunch of others. My only problem with this is some in the media, and I'm sure some of these ladies want to say that they're astronauts now. And I think that's a little unfair to real female astronauts, like our former head of COSI, a Central Ohio Science and Innovation Center, Catherine Sullivan, who went up on the space shuttle three times. And I think on one of the flights, she was mission commander, actually. And of course, Judith Resnick, who died on Challenger from Ohio. Like those females were real life, like actual astronauts.
Yeah.
People that go up on a joyride, like if I bought a $1 million ticket, I wouldn't come down and say I'm an astronaut.
Yeah.
But that's the only part of this story that irked me.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wanted to look it up real quick. And basically, an astronaut is someone who travels in space.
Yeah.
So right. I kind of wonder, though. I mean, now it says also, while the term was once reserved for military-trained professionals, recently accessible of space travel has seen the term astronaut now used to refer to anyone traveling in space, including civilians.
Yeah.
So the term has been morphed.
It's been morphed.
Which
I don't like it.
Exactly. Well, you know, maybe the term space traveler should be used.
Right.
And that's cool, too. I mean, I'd take a logo that I was a space traveler. That's still pretty damn cool.
Or for sarcastic, bitter old men like me. Cargo,
human cargo, exactly. But yeah, you know,
screaming cargo.
I think we need to reserve that, even though it's morphed. I think we need to reserve that astronaut term. I don't put any of those ladies. They did a great job. I'm excited for them, but that's not John Glenn material. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not Catherine Sullivan.
It's not Neil Armstrong. I'm sorry, it's not. But you're space travelers for sure. And
yeah, I mean,
when
they got down to Earth, I think one of the CNN commentators said, you know, this is proof that women do space. And I'm like, wait
what?
A minute. Women have been going up into on NASA missions, like to the space station on the shuttle.
That's a slap in the face. That's ridiculous.
That's the part I have a problem with. Like we have real accomplished engineers like Catherine Salt. She's an engineer, right? And Judith Resnick was an engineer.
Who said that again? It was a CNN reporter, a reporter of some ilk.
Somebody waving, the flag for feminism. And I'm like, you are decades late to the party.
And that's just a slap in the face.
None
of the female astronauts are going to say anything about this, probably.
Because they have too much class and I don't.
They do, exactly. But that is ridiculous because, now, if they're just looking at it from the standpoint of buying a ticket to go into space, and no other woman has so far, they're space travelers. They bought a ticket.
Right.
It's not the same as women in space. Stuff.
Next time I fly to LA, I'm not going to get off the plane, at John Wayne International and claim to the news crews that are surrounding me that I'm a pilot.
Exactly.
No, I'm just cargo on a 737. Come on.
Exactly.
In happier news, the Buckeyes went to the White House to celebrate their football national championship. And, we saw Ryan Day walking with J.D. Vance. And Brett has a funny story. I don't know if you saw this, but Brett, go ahead.
Well, of course, the trophy broke in Vance's hand. But so I'm looking at the video.
And this is the permanent trophy, right? Like we don't get.
I guess so. I don't know.
It's the one that goes around every champion.
I'm assuming it is. Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking at the video, and it reminded me because I'm seeing Vance take it, but this guy that's beside him is it. If you look at it really quickly, it looks like he's pushing the base out from under him, and it reminded me if you're an office watcher. The episode where Jim and Michael go make a sales call, and Michael actually falls into a koi pond. And it turns out that Jim actually pushed him. And the video of this, of the trophy breaking, looks like the guy beside Vance is kind of pushing the base underneath.
Right.
But I know it's a reaction to catch the thing. I know it is. But if you do it in slow-mo, it kind of looks like the guy's pushing the wooden base and Vance is trying to catch the top.
Yeah, he caught the bronze part or brass part or whatever that is,
yeah.
The gold part.
Yeah.
I
didn't realize the players officially got their rings at.
Wow.
At the spring game.
I did not know.
I figured
that
they got it right there after the game, but they got their rings for winning the national championship during the spring game, which is, 2 weeks ago or so.
Wow.
So maybe it takes some to make them. That's true. I didn't think about that piece of it. So, but yeah, that's all official. I saw a bunch of bling on players' rings. And
so I guess you would call that a forced fumble if the guy pushed Vance.
Exactly.
But Vance made some funny comments, something like, at least I caught the good part. You know?
Right. So. Exactly. Then I think he noticed, which is amazes me. I think I heard him say something. He caught a guy with a Michigan cap in the crowd.
Oh,
and he's like, "So we need security."
Yeah. I every time I see a Michigan, Michigan sportswear around Columbus, I just wonder if those people get harassed.
I know.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
But you know what? I give them some cred that you're willing to put it out, and they're proud of their team.
I was in Ann Arbor last summer, and I saw Ohio State regalia in Ann Arbor. So it happens both ways.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway. Yeah, so some sad news here. It is something that kind of makes me a little angry, actually. The Chillicothe Paper Mill... Yeah. Which is owned by a company called Pixel Specialties.
Based in Pennsylvania?
I think so.
Yeah, I think.
But that mill has been in operation historically in one form or another, obviously not the same building, come on, for like 230 years. Basically back to when Ohio was founded in 1803, they've been there that long. And Chillicothe was once the state capital.
Mm-hmm.
And 800 people are going to lose their jobs with this closure. And I just keep thinking these are the kinds of manufacturing jobs that these tariffs are trying to recall back to the United States. Paper making, right? Okay, so that's a very industrial process involving pulp from trees and all that chemical washing and all the stuff that goes into making paper. And here we have a plant in Ohio closing down at the same time that our illustrious governor and his Jobs Ohio nightmare, are doling out hundreds of millions of dollars to companies that are failing to live up to their contracts that are written so poorly, we cannot even claw the money back. And yet, what are they doing about these 800 jobs? I would be on the phone to this Pennsylvania company, and I hope Mr. DeWine is, and I hope Jobs Ohio are, but they need to get on the stick. They need to figure out a way to keep this plant open, and if it involves a grant or some kind of loan or whatever it is, because the owners said it was a very close call financially whether to keep it open or close it. So if it's that close, I say we ought to try to save these 800 jobs.
Well, and it'd be interesting once it starts to peel, and something came to my mind. I don't know if this is true or not, but it'd be interesting to know if they had conversations with the state of Ohio and Jobs Ohio.
Yeah.
And if we didn't go to the table to try to salvage this or not. Again, I don't know this, but once a story is out, you kind of peel back. It's like, well, wait a minute. They did have a conversation with DeWine's people in Jobs, Ohio, and they couldn't come to an agreement.
Yeah, let's find out.
800 jobs. 800. That's going to really, really hurt Chillicothe.
Oh, big time.
There's no way around it. There's no way around it. That is going to hurt them economically. They close in June or something that. And they're going to try to help these 800 find other jobs. Great, that's a great exit strategy.
There is no other.
There
industry.
Is no.
Exactly. What else are they going to do down there?
Right. And luckily, it was not a decision to move it overseas. It basically, I think they were closing it because they could do, they said, if I read it correctly, more economically in Pennsylvania, in their other plant or something like that. Okay, Thank God it didn't go across you know, the border.
Right. But look how we fight like hell in this state for these high tech,
exactly,
you know, tens of thousands
sexy
of
sexy jobs.
Right.
Exactly.
And then Microsoft cancels 3 data centers. Intel is 5 years behind if that thing ever happens.
Right.
And we're
giving away the farm. For
and we're job, giving
for,
away the farm
for employers that are bringing in fewer than 800 jobs.
Exactly.
50, 60, 80.
They're not going to be 800 jobs in those data centers.
No.
They're operated by a dozen people, maybe.
And paper is not going away, as we all thought. Oh, boy, internet, digital, that'll, you know, we still got paper. I mean, yeah, between a computer and a piece of paper, paper is always going to be there, even if it's something to wipe your butt with.
Well,
yeah, paper's going to be here, you know, come on.
I mean, the way they're anti-plastic bags now, it, you know, like
exactly.
Paper bags are coming back.
Exactly.
It's all nuts.
Yeah, it is. Man.
Another thing here in Ohio is our Attorney General, Dave Yost, who's running for governor, by the way, against Vivek Ramaswamy. Mm-hmm. He's been Attorney General now for several years, and before that, Auditor of the State of Ohio. He has joined with 38 other Attorney Generals in pursuing what is called a Pharmacy Benefit Management Company, or PBM.
Yeah.
These are middlemen companies that exist between manufacturers and insurers of manufacturers of pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm, and insurers of people's, you know, drug benefits, and the pharmacy on the bottom that dispenses it to you and me when we go get our drugs at the pharmacy or mail order, however, mm-hmm, we do it. There is this PBM system that's in between, and they get big rebates from the manufacturers that they then either give back to the insurance companies, okay, to subsidize them, or they give back to their closely held pharmaceutical chains like CVS, Walgreens, et cetera. So Dave Yost in past years has sued like 7 of these PBMs. He's gone after Big Pharma, if you will, to try to understand what these secret contracts are, because they are private between the PBMs, the middlemen, and Big Pharma that manufactures, and the insurance companies. So the bottom line is, according to an article that came out today by our friend Marty
Stout,
he's published an article, and he claims, and we'll try to get him on the show, but his research claims that the United States has the highest cost for pharmaceuticals of any developed country, and we have the worst outcomes in terms of the cost benefit to the patients, that our patients are either not getting enough drugs, or they're so high they can't afford them, or you know, basically they're burning up their benefits more quickly than they otherwise would if they were in another country. So he says we're dead last amongst developed countries for the benefits. Now, obviously, when you get to a certain age, your pharmaceuticals are free under Medicare for seniors.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of struggling young parent households, right, that aren't getting free pharmaceuticals. And so there's a lot more to this story, but these 38 plus Dave Yost attorney generals are asking Congress to step in with legislation, either outlawing the middlemen entirely, that they can't do this, so that these rebates will lower the cost retail of these drugs for me and you.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in the scenario, the middlemen always, if there's a middleman involved, it increases the price.
And it's
just another hand touching it. But
yeah.
But then you add these layers of, well, the rebate doesn't go all the way back to the consumer. They keep it. And you know, the middlemen, these PBMs, are making enough money as it is.
Well, and the claim that Yost is making is that some of the bigger pharmaceutical chains like CVS, and he specifically used them as an example, they are now getting into manufacturing of drugs themselves, they are a PBM themselves, and they are the pharmacy themselves. So they own all three layers. So they're giving the rebates back to themselves as a manufacturer subsidiary, or they're giving the rebates back to their retail chain. And so your mom and pop out there in rural Ohio, about 10% of those independent pharmacies have closed in the last year. So because they can't compete against the chains that get these subsidies.
Right, exactly.
It's a pretty complex story.
Yeah.
We're going to try to bring in an expert to break this down for us.
Yeah. So I
this just happened yesterday.
Right, exactly. So I did a lot of you are probably familiar with GoodRx, where you can use that to, you know, basically go to any pharmacy, Kroger, anybody, you know, and kind of go, they'll run a different programs. And I thought, well, is GoodRx a PBM, a pharmacy benefit manager? And they're not. They're not, which is, I bring this just as a side note because a lot of people use GoodRx. So GoodRx is a healthcare company that provides a platform for consumers to compare and access prescription drug discounts. It does partner with PBMs to obtain lower drug prices, which it then passes on to consumers. So there is good stuff going on. And again, that was my own research going, well, we use GoodRx. Is this something that we better pull back on because they're the bad guy? And they're
not.
You know, it doesn't look like on the outside, but then, you know, that's just a very quick summary of what, you know, Dr. Google is telling me.
Now, the PBM, the PBMs, I should say, and to be fair, right? So you got Yost on one side saying they are the reason pharmaceuticals are so high, okay? On the other hand, the PBM spokesman, they have an organization. They, you know, they're represented by, you know, lawyers and they have a trade association. They are saying if you put us out of business and it's basically manufacturers selling directly to big chains, there'll be nobody there to negotiate the rebates. And he says the cost will go up.
Oh my God. Talk about valuing yourself. If we're not there, oh, the world's going to break. Come on.
They are saying, the PBM Association is saying, you eliminate us, watch out.
Oh my God.
I don't know who to believe. I'm not, you know, like I'm not an expert, but
no one or no organization is that flippin' important. Yeah, you know the manufacturers will come up with some scenario because they want to make drugs and they want to sell drugs. They'll come up with a scenario to work with pharmacies.
I hope we don't shoot ourselves in the foot.
Anyway, that just seems so funny. They would blatantly say, hey, without us, watch out.
Right. I mean, you know.
Oh, my God!
Here we go. So this is a battle that I guess will be played out in the halls of Congress.
Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and it's going to be long and drawn out.
Oh,
there's so much money involved with this. My gosh.
Exactly
Which is sad because we're all going to get hurt in the end. More local pharmacies are going to go out of business because they can't fight the Walmart or the pharmacy that's down the street. They can just sell drugs for nothing.
I will say this. It is pretty ballsy for a Republican candidate for governor and a Republican attorney general to take on Big Pharma.
No, it is.
It is pretty ballsy.
Yeah, that's true.
It is not the typical profile. And evidently there's 38 other AGs that feel the same way.
Well,
so this might be one issue that cuts across party lines. God, I hope so.
Well, it touches everybody. You're exactly right. Yeah. It's that common sense look at stuff that we always are talking about.
Right.
It's like it doesn't matter red, blue, purple, green.
But look out for campaign
because
finance.
It affects everybody. Yeah.
Look, you know, these congressmen run every 2 years. And, you know, because of that Supreme Court decision, you know, these PACs can give unlimited amounts of money. And just look out for people buying off your congressman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
for sure.
Big Pharma, who's got the money to spend here, right? Mm-hmm. The independent pharmacies out in rural Ohio or Big Pharma? Who's got the money to spread around Congress?
Right.
So,
and if it is beneficial for pharma to keep PBMs around, which maybe it is. I don't know. You know,
so.
To reinvent the wheel costs some money. So, yeah.
Legislation in Ohio that galls me, frankly, because I think, in at least in the case of my township, my township trustees have done a terrible job, whether it's roads, whether it's hiding with NDAs, the fact that Intel was going to land like an atomic bomb in Licking County. They've done a terrible job, in my opinion. That's my opinion personally. And yet this legislation is going to raise their pay 5% if it passes. And county commissioners, it's a little bit more complex. Their pay is based on population. So a large county like Hamilton County or Franklin County or Cuyahoga County, you know, they get paid a lot more than, say, you know, Ashtabula County or something. So it bothers me because a lot of people are having to tighten their belts. Inflation is up. It's a little better now, but it's still, you know, the prices that it went up to under Biden are still pegged high. So it's the rate of inflation mainly that has not gone up under Trump. But eggs are, you know, even at $4.99 at Kroger's, that's way more than it used to be. It was $1.99, right? Not too long ago, and now it's $4.99 and up. So I'm just saying, you know, and I think the Township Association and the County Commissioners Association, they ought to tell the legislature, no, not right now. Our people are suffering. They can't pay their property taxes. This is not the time to raise our pay, in my opinion.
Well, exactly. Plus, I don't know any commissioners personally, but you don't hear.
My dad was a commissioner, I don't think he'd be for this.
Well, and you don't really hear commissioners going, yeah, this is a, I'm not being paid enough.
Come on.
I think at that level, commissioners do it because they're drawn to something because they want to change local. We go back to that local. And it doesn't matter how much they're making because it's a side gig anyway. They got a full-time job. The commissioner, typically, you know, county or township commissioners and such, are that's not full-time gigs for them.
It shouldn't be.
County.
But you pay them enough.
Yeah.
And then it starts to look like a career. They stay there forever. And, you know, they also get, you know, the big attraction, Brett, for a lot of these township trustees is the health care that they get. So they get a state employee level health care plan, right? Mm-hmm. And forget the pay. The health care plan's probably worth, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 a year just to have that kind of coverage because it's first class.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
Right.
You know, I just caught this too, the budget bill that the House has pushed on to the Senate, that there's some changes to the housing trust fund fees to keep revenue local and allow county commissioners to decide how to use the funds to support local housing and residential infrastructure projects and increase funding to brownfield remediation projects. Mm. That's cool.
The mayor of Columbus has announced that the city itself is going to develop more housing. And I think he said 1,000 units. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but I caught that. Yeah. And I wonder if, Brett, that may fit
some
in.
Some of it might be.
That may fit into that.
Here in Columbus, I think it's on Third Street. I think it's Third. Tearing down the old United Way building, and it will become low-income residential. Which, again, it's an empty building. Yes, the city has funds that they should be looking at.
That could have been what Ginther was talking
maybe.
About.
Maybe. At least that's their
condos,
the first start of it.
Apartments
or
something.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
But there is a shortage. There is said to be a shortage in the central Ohio area.
And it has to be, I think, those decisions to do this has to be on that very local level. You know, you got your commissioners or whatever. They've got to make the decisions on it. It can't be federal.
Because
we know better how to utilize development, I think. But
I'm a little less jazzed about the government being the developer.
Well, and that's true. True. No, that's true. But
a little less jazzed about that.
I think it's that.
Because what you end up with possibly is like what Chicago had with Cabrini Green.
Well, good point. You've got the slums and such too. That's
if there's no profit motive, then why keep the building up?
Right.
Just let it decay.
Yeah, that's true.
Let the gangs take it over because all you're doing is doling out, Section 8 housing vouchers every month.
But then developers aren't doing it, so you get to incentivize developers to do it. the government's got to step in. It's like, well, we'll help pay for it. It's like, it's almost the same thing, kind of. I don't know.
Private developers have been known to intentionally build what will be Section 8 housing. Yeah. Like, you can go into that business knowing that you're never going to have to chase a renter down for a check, because the government is giving them a check every month for Section 8 housing. They then turn that check over to you as the landlord. Mm-hmm. And that business model is not altogether terrible, because it's predictable. You don't have to go out and have a collections department. You get your money secondhand right from the government. I just don't want to see Andrew Ginther as the landlord.
Well,
that's my problem.
Exactly. Everything looks good at the beginning. We've talked about this numerous times. Everything looks good at the beginning, and then it morphs into something very ugly.
Right.
It control, oversight. Just don't go crazy on it. But yes, everything has the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. You're right.
So we turning to some justice stories.
Yeah.
Well, we have about 15 minutes left here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what do you got left?
There was just this incredible road rage event that happened on I-70 here in more or less downtown, like Mound Street exit of Columbus, just east on Interstate I-70, where, according to witnesses, two cars were brake checking each other. A Chevy Equinox and a Ford F-150. And I guess the guy in the F-150 was a chemo patient on his way, for cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. And why in God's name, a guy who's, dealing with life and death issues would participate in a brake checking exercise? If that is true, I don't know, but that's what witnesses said. With another motorist is beyond me. Mm-hmm. That kind of aggressive driving, you're begging for it. And so what happened, again, I don't know who the bad guy is, but the police have charged one of the drivers. The guy in the Equinox used a revolver or an automatic pistol and shot at the F-150 guy, who got shrapnel in his face, non-life-threatening, but they closed the highway down for 2 hours, and it was at rush hour. And so between 7 and 9 o'clock, nobody can go west on I-70. And, hey, people, I honestly never get into these things with other cars. Now, as a kid, I did a lot of bonehead stuff, but hopefully you mature as you grow up, and getting into a brake checking fight when you're going down the highway at 65, 70, 80 miles an hour, where you're going to stab your brakes to punish the guy behind you because he cut you off, and now you're going to brake check him, and then he gets in front of you and brake checks you back. Hey, cars can be lethal.
They are lethal.
Like I don't know what the hell you think you're doing out there, but you can't drive like that.
Wow.
There's innocent people, and some nut, clearly the guy who pulled out a gun and used it is guilty of a bunch of stuff. But the other guy, I don't know what he did, but if he exacerbated this and somehow, raged the other guy up, he is partially responsible if he did something like intentionally brake checked the other guy and caused, some kind of psychological reaction, which was wrong. But so is brake checking people.
Yeah. We've all experienced that moment of like,
what are you doing?
You're just ticked off because somebody did it. What's in their right mind? But it's like, give yourself that 2-3 breaths. Yeah. It doesn't matter in the long run.
It doesn't matter. And you might get yourself shot by some nut. Why would you do that when people have guns and they're and some of them are, a couple eggs short of a dozen.
Right. Exactly. And I don't know. There's just so many scenarios that can play from that you're taking a dad or a mom away from a family accidentally because you're just outraged and you get into an accident.
Yeah, I'll show him.
What's
wrong with you?
Wow. What a teaching moment that I'm going to do this to you because you cut me off.
So we like stats here. So the Columbus Police Department, as a result of this story, put out some stats. So far in 2025 in Columbus, there's been the felony assault unit has clocked. Now, I'm sure there's many more shootings than they know about, but the ones they know about and have investigated, 122 shootings that are not related to like a relationship, a dispute between people that know each other. 47 shootings between people that are, you know, that do have a relationship where there's a dispute or a family incident or something. And then on top of the 122 shootings and the 47 shootings between people that know each other are 189 other felonious assaults, knives, fists, shoes, umbrellas, I don't know, you know, ball peen hammers, whatever else people use. So, you know, there's too much violence out there, clearly, and, you know, I'm preaching to the wrong audience.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up because I just caught this PR piece that the Ohio Health Hospital System has joined this newly formed Agree to Agree campaign because of the, you know, the firearms have been linked to the leading cause of death for U.S. children ages 1 through 17 for 3 years in a row.
Wow.
And again, it's a stat. It exists. I'm not disputing that at all. But if you do go further into this ad council ad and, you know, it's basically designed to, we need to have conversations about gun safety. Whether you're for guns or against guns, it doesn't matter. Let's just say
they exist.
They exist.
And you got to deal with it.
And deal with it. But you kind of go in and the one thing kind of irks me about it is they do have this ad council video of these kids debating. All staged. It's not real life kind of stuff, you know, because you can kind of get the sense of like, okay, this 16-year-old will not talk like this, you know, even though it's a debate, you know, sort of thing. To me, yes, we need to have the conversation, but this thing is just no go. It will go no. You watch the video and you'll just see kind of going, okay, we're putting our money in the wrong place again. You look at the complexion of this whole audience that they've, you know, set up.
Yeah.
It's not who we need to be talking to.
Yeah.
If you dig deep into the 1 in 7, it's not who's in that audience. You know, we need to get to the crux of why are young black men, black women being killing themselves, you know, basically.
Yeah.
That's where the conversation is. And you look, and if you put that in your head and you watch this ad council video, It doesn't move the needle. It's just all show. We got to have this conversation. It's like, I think they're missing the mark on this.
Well,
they really do.
The idea that guns are lethal was, and that people who are supposed to be well-trained and understand guns and collectors and, you know, people who are supposedly, you know, have some expertise was a little blown up with a club that I'm a member of. And I'm a proud member of the Ohio Gun Collectors Association, and they had an incident at the March meeting at the Roberts Center, down south in off of I-71, here in Ohio.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a Xenia exit, I believe. At any rate, the Roberts Center was holding these bi-monthly meetings of my club that I belong to. It's a very large club, and people come in from all over the country. And what they do is they display, and a lot of them are educational displays. The guns aren't even for sale. Some of them are like, you know, a guy who collects every kind of Winchester, you know, lever action. And then he has a big display under lights and he educates you about, you know, this that was used by the cavalry or the buffalo hunters or whatever. And it's very interesting. So it's truly collectors. They had a guy who brought a gun, and this is a dealer. And he had a round in this rifle, okay, a 308, which is like that's deer hunter caliber. Like that will kill you if it hits you in the wrong spot. Mm. And one of the customers picked up the rifle, okay, and thinking, well, you know, a dealer wouldn't put a loaded rifle on his table, right? So he tries the action and pulls the trigger. And it hits, the bullet hits two people, including the dealer. I think the guy right behind the dealer that was showing the rifle. So the Roberts Center has canceled, you know, like no more meets at their hotel anymore. That's their convention center.
Wow.
And two people got shot. Mm. And this is a club where when you go in, every gun has a tie wrap that is put through the action so you can't even pull the trigger. And yet somehow this got around that safety protocol. So to my point is that you never point a gun at anybody, whether it's loaded or unloaded, because you need to train yourself that every gun is presumed to be lethal and presumed to be loaded. Right. Until you open it up and demonstrate and put something, a safety wrap in there or something, so that it cannot be operated, right? And you never point it at anybody. You always assume it's loaded, and people need to do that at home.
Yeah, exactly.
And put them in safes. Yeah. Put them in lock boxes. You can't keep a gun out there where children mm-hmm. or a buddy comes over and three beers into watching a football game. He goes, oh, hey, cool Smith and Wesson. Let me dick around with him. Before you know, somebody's shot.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So many levels of this that this just, again, so it's, even common, people, it's just common sense. It's just,
even people who claim to know what the hell they're doing with guns, right? Yep. Make mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You want to do a little outrage and wonderful?
Yeah, let's do. Yeah.
So while I'm still kind of cranked up, I'll do my outrage first. So in Frisco, Texas, I'm sure by now everybody's heard about this, these two high school boys. And it's getting racialized because the one boy who stabbed the other boy in the heart with a knife is African-American. And the boy who died, who was a straight-A student and a recruit for, a college football and, Boy Scout and everything else that's right in the world. He's the victim who died. And he died right there in front of his brother, his twin brother, and his father. Okay? They're at a track meet. And apparently the fans of the opposite team decided to this other 17-year-old boy and maybe one or two of his friends decided to get shade or get underneath the canopy of the other team. And this Austin Metcalf, the victim, football player at this track meet, he and his twin brother are watching the track meet. He says to Carmelo Anthony, the kid who stabbed him, he says, hey, man, this is for our team. This canopy, like, we have room under here for our team and not for other people. Do you please move, sit elsewhere. And they got into an argument. And I guess Carmelo, the guy charged with murder, with stabbing him, he says, Metcalf put his hands on me in some way, shape, or form, that he touched me. And his reaction, he claims, was self-defense by stabbing him in the heart with a knife, which, wow. I mean, that's the way in excess, right, of somebody who touches you. So at any rate, this has now gone racialized. And my outrage, besides the murder itself, which is, I know his brain is not fully formed, either boy at age 17, and there had to be a better way to work this out. Like, I'm going to go get the principal, or I'm going to go get a policeman or something. The one boy shouldn't have touched the other boy. And the other boy, definitely, sure as hell, shouldn't have brought a knife to a track meet and stabbed anybody in the heart. So anyway, what I don't like is the perpetrator who's been charged with murder. There's a, GoFundMe for his family. They raised $400,000 and they bought a house with it. Instead of buying a lawyer to help them, they bought a house. And I just think,
wow,
I don't know what the parents are doing, man. I would be focusing on trying to get my kid not to be sent away to prison.
Yeah.
I would be focused on that. This is not a time for you to buy yourself a house and upgrade your lifestyle. You got to work through the legal system.
Well, at 17, as we've talked about before on the show, he's probably being tried as an adult.
Oh, his life might be.
And that's.
Like, he's in great danger. Yeah. Like, he needs. He is saying crazy stuff, and his attorney's got to shut him down. He's saying that the other kid was the aggressor, and I'm defending myself. And it's like, dude, that's not going to fly.
No.
You don't stab people in the heart because they touch you.
Right. No, exactly. Well, it'll all come out. Yeah, exactly.
It'll come out.
Wow. Well, just you know, yesterday was the 15th of April, of course, tax day, and my outrage is in the mindset that we most people almost look forward to a tax refund.
Oh my God!
And from what I saw, and this is based on 2022, nearly 68% of federal filings resulted in a refund in tax. That is a lot higher than I figured. Now, again, sometimes you can't control things happen during the year. Yeah. You can plan the best plan, but it's like, oh, this happened, and you can take advantage of a tax situation. And 4 million Ohioans averaged a refund of $2,800.
Okay. And marketers are all over
that. Oh, my God. So, So think about this. The reality of a refund check is that you lent the government your money at 0% interest.
Yeah, for a year.
For a year. Okay? So you may think that refund's great. I would love to come out with zeros every year.
Yeah.
Damn it if I can't do it.
Yeah.
I do get refunds too, and it bothers the crap out of me when I start dividing that by 12.
Yeah.
And how much money I did not have to do something I want to do with it per month.
So
the refunds aren't the greatest. I mean,
right.
Seriously, you're loaning the government your money for a year. So get as close as you can to zero, honestly.
So I'm not a CPA, but I have stayed in a Holiday Inn. And my advice, I think there's a form called a W-4. Mm-hmm. If you work for an employer that, issues you a paycheck, the form's called a W-4. And that is where you list the number of dependents in your household, right? And that's how they calculate how much tax they're going to withhold.
Right.
So if you are consistently having thousands and thousands of dollars being withheld that you then get this big refund, the thing you need to do, right, is you need to have them collect less tax so that your paycheck is bigger.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That way you take the money home in real time instead of banking it, as Brett said, at 0% with the federal government. So, talk to an accountant like our friend Glenn Harper or your accountant and trim that W-4 to the amount of dependence that really reflects your household reality, and try to get it down to a lower number so that you have more money in your wallet.
Exactly. Exactly. because of all the increase in price, eggs we're talking about, and then taxes on your property and such like that.
Yeah.
Guess what? That refund money could help you with your tax
in real time.
In real time.
Yeah.
So, it
because you don't go to the grocery store on April 15th and then never again.
Right.
You're going every week.
You're going every week. Yeah, exactly. It's just that it bothers me that so many people live for that refund. And they think it's great, but it's that it was your money in the first place. Come on.
If you think it's great, what that's telling you is that you're terrible at saving money.
Right.
Like if you have to have the government forcing this excessive amount that they keep for a year, and then it's like Christmas when you get it. That's telling you don't have enough discipline in your life to put aside 5 or 10% into a savings account, so it's there when you need it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So my wonderful thing, very short, but I love this statistic. So I'm not trying to get political, even though it is political. Mm-hmm. Under Biden, it is said that 10 million illegals were somehow foisted upon the American people by various kinds of operations, whether it was the mass parole where they flew 530,000 people in, like the Haitians that were in Springfield, right? Mm. That whole deal. Or whether it is opening gaps in the fence for allegedly deer, so they could populate deer back and forth between Mexico and the United, as if people weren't going to walk through the same gaps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the estimate is somewhere between 8 and 10,000 people on average were crossing illegally every day under Biden at its worst, at the zenith. Okay. It is now down to 200 or fewer every day. So that is wonderful. Mm. I even think Trump's worst critics, if they're level-headed people who care about the country, you know, people like Eric Adams that's trying to run New York City. He said, hey, we have too many illegals in our hotels. We can't afford to feed them. We can't afford to educate them. You know, we need to get them out of New York City. So even big city mayors that are Democrats, I think, are applauding the idea that we need to take care of American citizens first and not bring in illegal people. Legal people, yes. Illegal people, no.
Right. Yeah, so. Exactly. My good story, it's Easter. It's Easter weekend.
Wow.
You know, and it's a late Easter this year, which really always throws me off. It's like, oh, hey, come on. Because it's nice to have a early Easter, you know, but I know it's all based on full moon situation, that sort of thing. So it floats every year. You know, it's never a calendar December 25 or July 4 holiday-ish, you know, that's being a religious holiday. But we wish all of you a very happy Easter. It's that time to really reflect.
Passover for our Jewish friends.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it's a very emotional religious time right now. So if you celebrate, congratulations. And enjoy what the higher power is giving us. Let's put it that way, you know, without getting too religious, but at the same time, you know, we three here in Common Sense Ohio are religious people, and we love it, and hopefully you're enjoying it as well too, the way you celebrate and such. But yeah, get with your family, enjoy the time. This is another time to get together and enjoy the family around you. Please do. But yeah, thanks for joining us. The episode today, as always, brought to you by Harper & Company CPA. We gave you a couple of examples of why to talk to these guys. Come on. What else can we do?
I can't do my own taxes. Yeah. It's too complicated.
God, no. Oh, my gosh, no.
It's way past my knowledge.
Yeah, because they're doing personal and business owner, entrepreneur stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Please, if you just aren't liking where you are right now, give them a call, harpercpaplus.com. And until next week, you have a great weekend. We'll see you then.